Hi, folks. I'm Dakota Cohen. Thank you so much for checking out the Building Your Homestead podcast, where I talk with expert guests about agriculture, health, economics, technology, philosophy, and other topics that I believe will help us to peacefully exit the increasing tyranny of our world and start building a parallel system, one homestead at a time. Mike, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Of course, man. I appreciate the invite.
Yeah. So one of the reasons I wanted to bring you on is because for years I've thought that comedy is the sugar that helps the medicine of truth go down. And I have never met anybody or seen any comedy work that has epitomized that ability so well. It was actually Chris, one of the guys I work with. He shared me one of your videos. I think it was kind of at the start of the whole plandemic stuff, and I was in just stitches. It was one of the funniest videos I've ever seen. Just like the execution, just everything about it was just absolute perfect comedy gold. And I've watched all your stuff, and so when we started up the podcast again, I really wanted to get you on and just kind of connect and see how you got into this space and what you do. And also, why the hell do you not have like a million views on YouTube? Are you like totally shadow banned or what?
I'm shadow banned pretty hard. Yeah. And they've started taking down, you know, the ones about certain needles with liquids in them and stuff like that. So some are getting removed, but I'm working on putting them in a safer place and making more. So that's all coming. But yeah, I agree. You know, there's definitely something about laughter, right? It's almost kind of like an alchemical thing that, especially when it comes to these kinds of subjects, right, where people are so stressed out, so stuck in fear, right? And that shuts down, you know, our evolution really as people, right? Being stuck in that fear state. So yeah, it's interesting to and fun, really fun to be able to, you know, take these subjects and frame them in a way where it kind of eliminates that fear, you know?
Yeah. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And also for me, like one of the things that has really kind of weighed on me, and I think why I really resonate with your work so much through going through this, is like I've always been a big, you know, fan of comedy, and just as a, the comedians, like even going back to like when we used to live in like complete dictatorships, like the court jester was always like he could make fun of anybody. He was like they're the one profession in society who can say anything to anybody. And like it's a kind of like okay, and like they're like the real like truth tellers. And then in the last couple of years, I've seen some of my favorite comedians just completely cuck to this whole thing and not say anything, and then try to like turn into like this woke, like I don't know, South Park, for example. I don't know if you're a fan of them, but like
I used to be a huge fan. I stopped watching.
Exactly, but like their last three or four episodes, where it was like, yeah, there was like an agenda behind it, like, and whether or not it's a conscious one or not, maybe they're just bringing their own biases in the work. But yeah, I saw that incredible art just take a complete dive in the last few years. And it was like on a subconscious level, I didn't realize it until I kind of first started watching your videos about how like heartbroken I was to see so many of these great comedians who've, you know, spoken truth to power in an incredibly funny way for years, and then all of a sudden like there's the line, and it's just like you're not gonna like a child could see the inconsistencies in what's been going on and make fun of it in a lighthearted way, but you guys who are just masters at your trade are just gonna look the other way. And when I saw your stuff, it just like I would literally like jumped out of my chair and just was like, yeah, go get him.
Yeah, I mean, to that point of it being agenda driven, but I just saw a video of Jimmy Fallon, you know, doing a crazy dance about the new variant and like the Roots are in the background playing along, and it's like, it's insane. It's, I mean, it's so blatantly propaganda at this point, especially at that scale, right? We're talking about the monopolies have completely, you know.
Yeah. So like that was the first thing I want to say is just like, dude, like, thank you for what you like, for what you're doing. It's huge. And just the relief to like, to be able to see that. And like, even if the stuff never wakes anybody up, just the ability to like share it with my family and friends who are also on the same page as just like a community building. And like, I don't see it as, you know, there's a way you could do that where it's like an echo chamber and like, you know, you're just kind of hating on it, but like just the lighthearted, it's just perfect. And I just, from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much for the work that you've done. And like, even you can just tell how much thought you've put into it, from the scripting, and like, it's really difficult to make a short, punchy, you know, the shorter the video, the longer it takes to make it. And so, yeah, it was just,
yeah, I appreciate that, man. Thanks.
Huge amount of appreciation. And yeah, like we're going to put links to all your stuff and your videos. And if folks, you haven't heard of Mike or his channel, Don't Slap Snooze, like you gotta wake up and you gotta go over and check out Mike's stuff, because it's awesome. Okay, so now that the kind of the fanboy stuff is out of the way, I'm really curious to hear like your story. Like what woke you up? When did you decide to you know, not slap snooze and get out of bed and start doing this work? Because it's heavy stuff. Like, I'm sure you've had to go through it. What was that process like of waking up and then transmuting that you know, the darkness and the anger and the frustration into this gold? What was that alchemical process like for you?
Yeah, I mean, the channel and the content really started, it definitely ramped up, you know, when COVID hit, and right. And just kind of intuitively, I could sense at the time, I knew nothing about, you know, viruses or anything like that. And let me know if you want to avoid certain words.
you say whatever you want.
Okay. So it really started with me just learning the material myself. Right. And then, so I started researching things like vaccines and the ingredients in them. And it's like, I'm coming from a comedy writing background as well. So once I started focusing on that area, it just became like, this stuff is already so absurd.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a matter of now seeing the material and framing it in a way that highlights, like, it's crazy out here. It is a joke. You know what I mean? Like, it's getting so wild that it's absurd.
Yeah, it is. It is. Well, and it just reminded me, Norm MacDonald is one of my favorite comedians. And he has this thing where he's like, the perfect joke in his mind was one where the punchline
is the same as the setup.
And it's like, literally all you have to do is just like you do in your videos, just read the studies.
Yeah.
And then just read them again. And it's like, that's the joke.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just pointing out, this is already wild out here. I'm just pointing out. Right. And and when we're approaching these subjects, right, like, it's very triggering for people. So I am trying to just be like, look, I don't know, just don't, you know, I'm just pointing it out. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So you said you had like a, you were already in a comedy background. So yeah, like what was your early life before that kind of got you to that point where you didn't slap snooze anymore and you're like, that's it, I got to do something. What was your life and career like before that?
Yeah. So after college, I started doing stand up in New York, which is where I'm from. And then very shortly after I started, I kind of, you know, to be honest, let societal pressures, parental pressures kind of push me back into getting a job, right? And being in that world. And so I got a job writing scripts for TV commercials. So I kind of at the time looked at it as a way to still be creative, still write, still make jokes, and you know, have a steady paycheck.
Yeah.
And then it didn't take long until that was starting to drain me of energy, just kind of giving away creative energy to these corporations. And then as I started to wake up, I realized kind of how this information is proliferated to the public and, you know, the intention behind it, right? Really how information is controlled, like, you know, the pyramid on the dollar bill, right? Where it's like, we're now, I could see that this information being that I am in charge of presenting to the public, right? Creating, you know, multinational advertising campaigns, it's propaganda. It's just, it's me receiving some kind of directive, which is not the directive they tell me, right? It's very clearly not the purposes they're telling that they're giving me. And then my job is to now translate that into something entertaining and digestible and feed messages to people. And they don't, and then the people, it's so compartmentalized, like the people I was reporting to, like on a day-to-day basis, they have no clue what, you know, these products are doing or what, you know, the communications are intended to do. And so it was just like, I felt, I was like, no one's seeing what's going on here.
That's funny. So like, you were in a position where you were designed to make the, you know, the sweet syrup that would hide the poison pill.
That's exactly right.
And get people to swallow it, and as opposed to using it to actually use it for what comedy is for, is to, it's to say something truthful in a way that sticks. And even though it's really hard, it gets past, it's like that. And it's the sugar that helps the medicine of truth go down. That's good for you for waking up to that and making that recognizing the, like you said, you know, you were just your it was soul crushing.
Yeah, it really was.
To be in that place and to transmute that into something so powerful. So was there anything in particular, like a moment where you were just like, that's it, I'm done?
There was, I don't know. I don't want to mention the company by name since I signed some NDAs, but I'll dance around it a bit. we would get, you know, instructions basically on, like, for example, here's a new product, here's what we want to talk about, all this kind of stuff. Right. And then our job was to, like you said, kind of create the syrup. And so we got a brief to work on a food product, and they were touting a benefit. And so at the same time I was working on this, I was listening to, I don't know if you've heard of Andy Kaufman, Dr. Andy Kaufman. Kind of blew up on the scene. He was talking about how he filed Freedom of Information Acts, and received a bunch of information about how there was collusion between, you know, the government, the food industry, pharmaceutical industry, to demonize, it was cholesterol, to demonize cholesterol, and then use that to create, you know, statins in the pharmaceutical industry, use it to jack up sugar and in the food industry and all this stuff. And so while reading that, I was being tasked with this idea to, you know, we got to lower everyone's cholesterol. And so I'm going, well, and then it dawned out, that's kind of when it dawns on me, when you're like writing silly scripts for this kind of stuff and you're like, oh, but there's so much going on that has to do with this subject matter behind the scenes, not even close to being discussed. And then, like I said, we're creating the communications that are going to affect millions of people.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah, that's...
It's crazy.
It's wild. And, you know, I'm glad you shared that without going into details, because, I mean, this is something that keeps me up at night, literally. It's like, how do the people that are working for these corporations, how do they not see it? And what is that? Like, I mean, I get it, everything's compartmentalized, but like, you would have to be completely numbed out and just a zombie to not ask any questions. So I'm curious, like, from your, because you kind of broke through that mold and you know, cleared away the you know, the gunk from your eyes, so you could finally see. From a psychological or, you know, a spiritual thing, like, what is it that stops people from seeing the truth that's just so blatantly out there? And maybe from your own perspective, because, like, you know, was there a time where you kind of just like, well, it's not that bad, and you kind of just swept it under the rug and you kept doing your job until, like, the pressure built and it was just like you couldn't handle it anymore? Or was it just like a light switch? Like, was it a slow buildup for you? And then also, like, yeah, what is it stopping from other people blowing their fuses and doing what you're doing and just, you know, whistleblowing on this stuff? Because it is, we're the ones that are keeping this machine going.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say exactly, right? It's just unconsciousness. Like, that's the thing. Like, everyone I worked with, right, is not an evil person. They're just not thinking.
Yeah.
It's just complete ignorance, really. And unfortunately, like, for me to be thinking like that, I had to be listening to someone who's filing Freedom of Information Act disclosures. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, and then, you know, there's so many layers to it, right? You talk about, like, talking to someone and you get the fluoride stare, right? And it's just like, people are just, I don't know, man. But I mean, in some respect, I think there's kind of like a bifurcation where it's like, all right, we're just going to go over here and start, you know, building the new stuff.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I do think it's getting so intense that more people are kind of coming awake more quickly, right? Because we are all connected at that level where it's, if one light turns on, more lights are going to turn on around it.
Yeah, exactly. And this is exactly why comedy is so important, is because, like, when I kind of got red pilled years ago, you know, I went to some pretty dark places, and it's super depressing and heavy, and you realize everything you've learned is a lie, and it's literally is soul crushing in another way, to like carry all that weight. And like, I used to try to wake other people up, and I would send them. So there's I had a guy on the podcast, from Alex Zek, if you're familiar with him from The Way Forward.
Yeah, Way Forward, we're friends.
And he has this analogy of, like, there's like black pillars. So it's like, some people get kind of red pilled, they wake up, and then there's just like, everything is just like, it's all shit. They're super cynical, there's no hope, and they just spend all that time just listening to, you know, Alex Jones, and you know, just getting riled up. And like, for many years, that's where I was at. Because it's maddening to see it's wrong. There's so much injustice and suffering, and that's completely needless. And all people need to do is wake up and get there. And so it like, you know, for me, I spent a lot of time trying to, you know, forcibly basically go around handing out, you know, red pill suppositories against people's will, and it doesn't work. And it just further it. And so this is why, like, work like yours is so funny, because I will never, ever send anybody, you know, an Alex Jones or a David Icke or I won't do it. Cause like, even if I do, what they're saying is like, yeah, I agree with that, I'll never do it, because I've seen the psychological effects that has on people, and it doesn't work in terms of waking people up. But I've sent people some of your 3 or 4 minute videos, because there's that comedy, and it's light, and it's condensed. And so I'm curious, like, yeah, what's been the response to your, that you've seen from other people in terms of your work? Have you had people reach out to you? What's the response been like?
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised at how many people reach out. Like, even people like looking for more like help with it, when I can't always help them, you know, people are really needing it, which is, you know, like, it was surprising to me to see people like commenting on it, like, thanks for your service. Like, it's you're welcome, I guess, you know, cause I started doing it for myself, really, but it does. It's humbling, and yeah, it's got me motivated to do it at a more consistent and bigger rate.
Yeah. I think you must have had a hiatus for a while there, because I'd like watched all your videos, and then there was like a slow period, and then one day I got a link from Chris of like one of your new ones, and we were all just, you know, killing ourselves laughing, and he said that he posted, and the comment was, something like, you know, don't you ever go without, don't you ever go for 3 months without making a video again.
Yeah, he gave me some shit when we got on before. They're coming more consistently, I promise.
Yeah, yeah. And all jokes aside, like you know, it's hard being a content creator and being on demand, but like just saying that is like it's needed. Like I believe that, you know, art is a recreation of the world, not as it is, but as it should and could be. And like your work is, your art is so valuable at not only pointing out, you know, the way that the world shouldn't be, but, and giving people hope and a sense of community and I'm just like, thank God I'm not insane. Cause I've, you know, I felt that for years of just like, am I crazy? Like, am I out of my freaking mind? Or is this not just wild stuff? And just to see someone who in 5 minutes, just like, there, thank you.
Yeah. And the fear component again is huge on that, right? Cause it's taking someone to the other side now, and you can't, the curtain's pulled back, the illusion's done. You can't go back now to seeing, you know, it's now, it's absurd. It's over now. Right. So it kind of puts a stake in it.
It does. And just as you were saying that, like the pulling back the curtain, it's like, it kind of, it's the sugar that helps the medicine of truth go down, but it in the same way, it shatters the illusion, but it also like shows you, like it shatters the illusion of that fake reality. But then as opposed to there being like, you know, a demon behind it and like aliens are coming to get us and like all the stuff, it's like now there's a laughter and like joy right behind that curtain of bullshit. And so like, it makes it so much easier for people to lean into that. And just like, thank God, like there's at least one other person out there who isn't insane and sees all this darkness and then can still laugh about it. And like that, I literally can't think of any better way to wake someone up than the kind of stuff that you're doing. And you've got an incredible skill for it as well. So it's just, yeah. Bravo,
yeah,
man.
Yeah. Thanks. I mean, yeah, that relief after is everything, right? It's the same. It's similar to something like permaculture, right? Where it's like, once you can wrap your head around the idea that it's just abundant here. Like if you have an apple seed, you can plant it and make a tree that has tons more apples with a ton more seeds. And then you can't go back from that. So every piece of communicate, like a news story or something that you see after that, is just, it's silly. It's nonsense. You just look at it and you go, this is nonsense.
Yeah, exactly.
So then it's over.
Yeah. As opposed to like yelling at the TV, you just giggle and change the channel. Yeah. That's great.
You can laugh and just move on now.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm curious, what's the, I'll see if I can get all that you've talked about on your channel, you know, vaccinations, you know, germ theory, you know, geoengineering, and your latest one was about all the shit that they put in, like literally gasoline that they put into like the, you know, medicine.
Yeah. Petroleum.
So what's the next topic? What's the next?
So right now I'm working on a few scripts right now that I'm gonna shoot soon. One is about, Federal Reserve System.
Okay.
Some kind of law and money related stuff. And then, I'm also working on some more health related stuff. It's going to be all over. Basically, whatever I'm reading, whatever I'm researching myself and interested in, that's going to get flipped into something.
Cool. So is there any topic that, I'm sure you've got like a whole list, but is there any topic where you're just like, whoa, like even I won't touch that?
No, definitely not in terms of that. But I do try to, there is an intention in the work to, like, for example, on every video, I put a work cited. So it's like, I'm trying to make it to the best of my ability where you can't really, I mean, you can disagree, but you can't say I'm full of shit. You know what I mean? So I'm working with subjects that are, you know, quote unquote, like easily sourceable, right? Things that, you know, referencing papers and, you know, established research as much as I can. Obviously the research is rigged, but you know, so besides that point, you know, approaching it in a way where I don't, you know, it's not easy to dismiss it as nonsense.
Yeah. Yeah. When, and especially, you know, in a lot of your videos, like the resources that you're citing, they're coming from the horse's mouth. Like it's not right. Like there's like someone who's like a critic who's like, no, like the government said this, or like, you know, there's literally a corporation called Weather Modification.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, to that point, like I just had a video deleted, the vaccine one from YouTube. And, you know, they say, you know, it's medical misinformation. It's like, I was reading off the World Health Organization website. Like, what do you want me to do?
What's been your favorite like topic so far that you've dug into that like for you, like was the most kind of liberating or insightful as you were creating these scripts?
Yeah, I mean, probably the biggest, like the biggest curtain that got pulled back was the germ theory. Cause then that just, I mean, it changes everything, right? In terms of, you know, the way we think about our health, the way we think we become ill. And then, you know, once that seed is planted, then to the point of, you know, you can't restore the illusion, we can talk about viruses for the next 20 years. But it's nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. So for folks who aren't familiar with the, you know, the difference between terrain theory and germ theory and just the all that stuff, what's your elevator pitch to shatter that illusion now?
I guess the simplest way to put it is that there's no good evidence, no proper evidence that establishes the fact that we get sick through, you know, invisible bugs that fly up our nose. And, you know, there's been, I touched on this in a couple of videos, there's been plenty of studies that you can go look at that they're running experiments where people are literally sneezing in each other's faces and coughing in each other's faces and doing handshakes and all this stuff, and they just can't do it. They can't make people sick.
Well, then, and then, but yeah, but then if they drill a hole in a monkey's skull,
yeah, exactly,
formaldehyde, the monkey dies. And it's like, aha, viruses.
And I had that joke in the video too, where it's like, you can inject anything into someone's brain, and you can inject butterscotch pudding into someone's brain, and they're going to get sick, and you can call it polio if you want. Yeah. Like, we can call it whatever we want. These, like, all these labels for diseases are just labels. They're just arbitrary. Like, there's, you know, there's no foundation to them.
Yeah. And it's wild, because this is the other piece I like about your work, is that one of the biggest kind of resistances that I've come across, even in myself, but also just in other people I've talked with, is their resistance to, you know, pulling back that curtain, is it's the problem of the big lie. Where it's like it's so big, and it's so like no one could possibly have been pulled that off for 100+ years or 200, 300 plus years without anybody else asking, you know, seeing behind the curtain. So I'm not even going to pull behind the curtain, because no one else has ever done it for 300 years. So why even bother? And yeah, and just like a few, literally one punchline, you can just rip that Band-Aid off. And yeah.
Yeah, it's tricking people into thinking. Essentially, you know, they're laughing, and by the time they're finished, hopefully they're laughing, by the time they're finished laughing, they've realized that they got some stuff they got to mull over now.
So I'm curious, like you mentioned that, you know, there's an intention behind all this. Like, what can you just walk me through, like your process for, you know, from the time that you like identify, if you got a trade secret, you know, don't tell me, like, what is that like, if like identifying a topic, and then like from there to you're hitting publish on a video, what does that look like for you?
So it's a long process, honestly, which is why they take a while to make. But usually the initial inception is I'll be reading something, you know, whatever that is, and then something strikes me in that moment where it's just an intuition that, like, oh, you know, sometimes it's a thing that's blatantly absurd, right? And then, and so something jumps out at me, and I'll make a note of that, and then I'll keep going. And then eventually I'll have, a few of those moments that I can start to see, okay, now this goes here and this goes here and this goes here. And so, you know, I'll write it out by hand first, and then I'll put on the computer eventually, and then record it and edit it. And so, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And then, so I'm curious, as you're going through that process of doing that research, and like you're, and when, as you're going down the rabbit holes and maybe kind of pulling back the curtain on some new things for yourself, do you find that like the fact that your goal is to eventually make a joke about this, that it like, it makes it easier for you to, you know, dive deep into the, you know, the darkness that is some of these subjects? Or do you still find yourself like struggling at times to, you know, even, yeah, to pull back some of these curtains and take a peek?
Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's hard, right? That's what we were saying before. Like this stuff is heavy, right? When you were really talking about the reality of it, and how it affects people and all that. And so, yeah, that's the really the only way that I could personally do it, is to make a joke out of it and transmute it and then pass that on. Cause then that's the way I can deal with it. Right. And synthesize the information and yeah.
Yeah. It is. And like, this is the, you know, like my, growing up, like my family always had like a super dark sense of humor. And, you know, I've kind of gone back and forth with it. Cause it's like, yeah, like, are you, well, like, are you like, in, am I enabling it by like laughing at this stuff? But again, like seeing your work was just really helped me to cut through. It's like, no, like humor is so powerful for this. And so, I'm wondering, you growing up, like, yeah, like what, how did you get started on this comedy path and this ability to make light of some of the most terrifying, like the fact that governments have been manipulating the weather for decades, like steering hurricanes, killing millions of, like, and yeah, all these crazy things, they're all true. 100%, like that's the ability to do that with a giggle is not something that comes easy to most people. And yeah, well, how did you develop that? Was it part of your family life, or was it like a switch that got flipped one day? Yeah.
I mean, I don't know exactly. I grew up loving comedy, watching a lot of comedy, right? As a kid, I was a big George Carlin fan, still am, although, you know, there's disagreements now that I'm on this side of being awake, right? And, you know, but for the most part, in terms of the writing style and his approach, that's a huge influence for me. And then another big influence was Louis C.K., because of the fact that he was so well-rounded in terms of being able to deliver a product, right? He directed, shot, edited, wrote all of his own stuff. And so that makes it undeniable. Like you can just do it from, right? So that's kind of the other aspect of it, is I'm doing every piece of the video from start to finish. So that, building that skill set was important too. Being able to execute, see the entire vision and execute every part of it.
Yeah. So are there any comedians that you still lean on to go for a laugh when you need to, or are you pretty much the only one in this space left who isn't willing to to cuck to this?
Yeah, it certainly seems like people have their allegiances. Yeah. But I mean, I can also, depending on who it is, you know, watch, you know, kind of meet them where they're at, right? And not necessarily go to someone looking for them to, you know, talking about certain subjects, right? If they're just being silly and you know, punching hard, you know, that's, I still love that. And then, you know, in terms of this kind of space, Owen Benjamin, you know, has paved his own lane, in terms of getting kind of booted out and then, you know, creating his own path. So yeah, shout out to him too.
Yeah. I haven't dug into a whole bunch of Benjamin stuff, and he's a bit of an acquired taste for.
Yeah.
This isn't an endorsement of everything that he does, but.
Well, you can't agree. You know, everyone.
Yeah.
Everyone's not 100% aligned on everything ever. So it's.
One of my favorite lines that he had was, I don't remember where I heard this, but he was kind of talking about his comedy, and he's like, there's something. He said there was like something deeply satisfying about being able to to cut through like a $1 billion marketing campaign and like propaganda. One tweet.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, we're just like with like one tweet. And like the example he gave was like, he wrote this joke about, you know, Bruce Jenner becoming Caitlyn Jenner, and like, you know, they got, you know, Woman of the Year. And like, there's this huge, like, you know, literally on like Vogue and like just a literally a multi-billion dollar marketing. There's an agenda behind that, you know, they'll get into the weeds of it. And he said, like, he cut through it all with just a question, which was like, how is it that, you know, Caitlyn Jenner is Woman of the Year when she hasn't been a woman for a year?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's just like
so succinct.
A perfect joke.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's absolutely true. It's again, now you can't go back now. Now
you can't,
that
you can't
go it's back. It happened so quick and it's over.
Yeah. And like, that's the other piece I like about it is because like that one statement, like you're going to remember that. Like I heard that whatever 2 years ago and it's like, it's stuck with me versus, you know, for me to, you know, understand all of the nuances behind, you know, the gender reassignment stuff and the agenda. Like it's such a rat's nest of things. And there's all these side tangents, but it's like, you can just remember one punchline. And or memes, this is another thing too, is just like being able to share that. Yeah,
it's very satisfying to, there's a bullseye.
Yeah. So I'm curious, like so are videos your only, like, is that your main modality? I'm not on Twitter and stuff like that myself, but do you have like other channels or other formats that you're kind of getting your work out there in?
Yeah, so that's coming. It's still going to be video based, but I'm going to do a lot more of those short videos that we've been referencing. And then I'm also working on some long form content that are like, I don't really even know what to call them. I'm calling them kind of like classes, but they're going to be in the same kind of tone of the videos are, you know, longer pieces that are, you know, lectures about subjects or, you know, on a breathwork one, stuff like that.
Oh, man, that's brilliant. I love that idea of it's, and it's funny. It's something that I do myself with my, you know, kind of permaculture education and stuff like that. It's like, I always, as I was building my slideshows, I tried to have like a joke, you know, every 10, 15 slides or something like that. And like, if I was better at it, the whole thing would just be, you know, set up and then punchline, just the whole thing. But cause there's nothing, I don't think there's a better way to teach. That's genius for building some of these courses. So what course subjects, like you mentioned breath work, what else are you thinking?
So I have ideas for a few, but the two that I've started working on were a breath work one and then another one about detoxing.
Okay.
So yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Detoxing the bowels, getting shit out of you and all that good stuff.
Yeah. When you used to do stand up, did you ever record any of your sessions, like your routines or whatever?
There are some. They're bad. So they're on a hard drive somewhere. I don't want them to get out. Hopefully, no one else has the copies.
Fair enough.
It takes a long time to get good at that. So yeah. I don't claim the stand-up title. I haven't earned it. But
okay.
I dabbled.
Yeah. But it's the reason I asked is like, one of my hacks that I use, and this is kind of tying it back to this education thing and why comedy is so valuable, is if I'm ever doing like a long drive, I try not to drink coffee because I'm jittery enough as it is. But what I found was like, I listened to a lot of audiobooks. And so if I'm listening to an audiobook and I start to like, you know, get, you know, sleepy, I'm dozing off, I'll either do one of two things. I'll switch on a fiction book, or I'll turn on a stand-up comedy thing, like on a you know, podcast or something, and it wakes you up immediately. Like you can be like half asleep, and you're like almost pulling into the ditch, and then you turn on like a Louis C.K. skit or, you know, the old Bill Burr before he got bought, and like it wakes you right up. And so just the ability to the insight of bringing that into education as a way of keeping people engaged and And getting that stuff to stick is that's brilliant, man.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
So where can people, where are you going to be putting that stuff? Do you have a website? Are you going to do like a LMS or what?
Yeah, it's going to be on a website. It's not live yet, but it's going to be don'tslapsnooze.net. So yeah, in the near future, a couple months, I think.
Okay, cool. We'll have to, whenever that gets up there, if folks are listening to this after the fact, we'll posthumously put this, that link in the show notes there so that folks can find that. So I'm also curious to just in that waking up phase for you, was there anybody that you leaned on that like helped pull you through that, you know, that kind of dark night of the soul? Cause it's, I got stuck there for years in that black pill, you know, there is no hope, we're all fucked kind of a phase. But you know, it sounds like you kind of woke up a couple of years ago, just at the start of this, and then, you know, seemed to move through that pretty quickly. Yeah. Was there any guides or mentors that helped you pull through, or was it just comedy itself?
Yeah, it was, you know, mostly that attitude, you know, that approach to trying to make it as light as you can. But so, you know, which is to say no one really in my physical space, but tons of, you know, the resources I was reading and collecting, you know, all those people played a role that they have no idea about, you know? And even I kind of went through, like, in high school, I was bypassing the firewall on the computer lab to look at the time, David Icke websites. So I was already kind of, I had a little budding when I was younger, and then I kind of went back to sleep for a little bit, and then went to college, got a job. And then I said, oh yeah, all that shit. Like sometimes I'll find like a video or something that I watched when I was like 15, and like, I'll have the memory of like, oh, I've seen this. Like there's this one little animation about straw men that like went on YouTube decades ago. I saw it recently and went, oh shit, I've seen that. It's interesting to see like the stuff that wasn't really registering back then now is coming back.
Okay. Yeah. So it's been more than a couple of years for you to get through that.
That's cool. Well, I took a nap.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah. So before we got on the call, you mentioned that you were, one of the other topics that you've been getting into is like the food shortages that's been coming up. What got you switched on to that?
Well, again, it's kind of that one in particular is, I think, very easy to get trapped in that fear lockdown, right? When you're seeing news headlines about food running out. So it's like, kind of what started it was I kept seeing a lot of news publications, at least here in the States, of food distribution centers and, you know, food processing centers just burning down.
Yeah.
Like in dozens and dozens and dozens, just catching on fire. And then, so again, to the point of like kind of seeing a pattern, right? And then being like, all right, so now I gotta go see what's going on here. And then the first thing I saw, or one of the first things, was I think it's the National Fire Protection Association. So I guess that's the U.S. government agency that protects us from fires, I guess. But they made, you know, their official statement of, you know, they acknowledged all of the fires and said, paraphrasing, this isn't unusual. All this had, the last few years have been like this, so we don't really have to worry about it. And then that logic to me was just like, I mean, it's like if you came to me and you're like, I shit my pants twice today. And then you're like, but it's nothing I'm worried about because yesterday I shit my pants 5 times. But it's like, that doesn't make shitting your pants twice today awesome. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like making a consistent pattern out of this is, that means it's okay. Like, because they also burned down last year and the year before, that's, don't worry about it. It was, this is crazy. And then, so you get like this weird thing that the media does where like they focus so much attention on this thing intentionally, right? That's the agenda, to publish this across a ton of publications. And then you have an official agency come out and say, nah, you're making a big deal out of nothing. And then it's like, so even if we take them at face value and say, okay, it's probably true that, you know, food related fires are a small percentage of all the buildings that burn down in a year. That's probably true, but I don't see any news headlines about like, you know, this exotic bird emporium burned down, like, and they're burning down all across the country. It's we're specifically being our energy, our attention is being directed towards this thing.
No, it's a great point. Cause it's essentially either this is ramping up or we are being, or it's always been the same and that hasn't changed, but now there's a focus on it. But either way, why?
Right.
No. That's and like this is something, you know, from my background in agriculture is like it's real. Like there's just in my area, like we live in central Alberta here, there's been like I think 3 butcher shops in the last 2 years that have burned down within like an hour of my house. Mm-hmm. And it's huge. And just the other day, I also sell organic, like soy free, you know, basically garbage free food for, you know, chickens and feed for chickens and pigs. And one of the ingredients I started adding in was like this amazing crab product from the East Coast. And I just put in like a $10,000 order the other day. And the next day, the factory fucking burned down.
Wow.
And which is crazy. And like, again, whether, you know, correlation isn't causation, I know all that crap, but like the fact that, you know, you've got, you know, guys like Bill Gates buying up all this land, building all these pea protein plants and like Impossible Burgers and fake meat, lab grown meat. And then meanwhile, all the other things are like just slowly being burned to the ground. Or like with this crab meal plant, we dug into a little bit, it was sold to like this other, you know, multinational company that's owned by we lost track of it. I didn't dig into it too much, but it was like, it was sold a month ago. And now it burned to the ground. And like, I haven't looked into this, but like, bet you they took out a massive, you know, insurance policy against fire. And like the alleged, you know, reason that it burnt down was like a drum of an oil barrel spontaneously combusted.
Yeah, so like, that's
there was a bomb in the middle of the building that went off.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like thinking about the ownership of it, right? Because that's also kind of what happens. Like I read this book called, I think it was called something like Disaster Capitalism or something like that, or maybe the title was Shock Doctrine or something. But the point of it was that you see, like, for example, even in natural disasters, where, you know, towns get leveled out or whatever, and then, you know, Halliburton or whoever comes in and buys all that up, and then it's a complete transfer of ownership. So that's really interesting when it comes to the food, because it's like, I'm pretty sure yours isn't going to get burned down unless you sell it, you know what I mean? You know, like, so it's again this, like, when we get into the law stuff too, it's like we do have to contract and consent and give permission for these things to happen. It's interesting.
That was The Shock Doctrine by Naomi Klein, I think.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Although, I mean, this is the funny thing, and this is just the level of, I don't know much about Naomi Klein, but I've heard some good stuff that, you know, she's kind of controlled opposition too.
Oh, and that's the only thing I know of her. So.
Yeah, exactly. And but like, that's one of the patterns that I've seen in a lot of this stuff is that, you know, there's always a lot of truth that they pack around whatever the thing that is they're trying to sell you. Like that's the sugar that they're trying to hide the poison pill in.
That's especially true when we talk about the germs theory stuff, because that's easy for controlled opposition, because you can spill a whole bunch of beans about, you know, the pharmaceutical industry and vaccines and all this stuff, but if you're not going to give up the goods about viruses, then this show is going to keep going.
Exactly. And I think it was Lenin who you know, the communist who said like the best way to defeat our opponents is to control them.
Mm.
And that's exactly it. And you know, so many of these different revolutions over the years have been led by, like it's just, was the Who song, and meet the new boss, same as the old boss. It's like they were set up to just, you know, bait and switch the whole system around, and like, rah, 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 yeah, we won. And it's like, no, you know, Trump wasn't a savior. I'm sorry, folks, but the whole system was corrupt, and he wasn't going to fix it. And like, here's all this evidence. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you doing
a video on Trump anytime soon? That would be a wicked, wicked video to.
I've considered it. I try not to. Well, I don't even want to say I try not to. I tend not to, for whatever reason, do like certain people, because it's almost a distraction in itself. You know what I mean? To be like
shooting fish in a barrel.
Yeah, or to even play into like this guy versus this guy. It's like there's no guys. Give up.
Yeah.
Give up on waiting for any guy.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm. Are you, have you gotten to like the whole voluntarism type stuff, or like where do you sit on the political spectrum or the?
I really don't sit on it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I think the best thing we could do is, one, start internally, fix that up, and then, you know, make connections like we're doing now. We're like, you have such a tremendous skill set, you know, like I think collectively we can start moving into the private and switching systems over to where I don't know how that works. I don't think there's a figurehead in any capacity. I don't know how that works, you know, how we divvy it up, but I do know that a lot of us are getting together and saying, let's head over here.
Yeah, exactly. And that's where I'm at too, is I've never voted before, even when I was,
yeah,
even before I woke up to all this stuff, I could see that it was the thing that woke me up to that, I was like 14 years old, and we went on a class trip to the parliament, and we got to watch live one of their like question and answer sessions. And so like, these are like the clips that you see on like TV, where like, you know, someone will ask like this really hard hitting question, and the like they're all stitched together. And so like, it looks like really adversarial. Right. And so I got to watch it live without all the editing as like I was like 14. Like someone like stood up and basically like pointed out there was the opposition. They're like, it was something really damning. And I like basically accused them of like, you know, embezzlement and like crime. And the other party stood up and, you know, basically just avoided the question. And then they just like went on to the next one. And as a 14 year old, I was like, he didn't answer that lady's question. Like, what's going on here? And my mind just like melted right then. And we kept watching it for another 30 minutes. And this just happened over and over and over again. And within like 30 minutes of being in the parliament building, I was like, this whole thing is a joke.
Yeah. I mean, all that's like, especially when we're talking about editing and like all those, kind of like, who knows what, like if it's on a screen, especially if it's coming from, you know, legacy media, and there's like a United States seal on it, or, you know, whatever Canadian thing. And it's like, this is just, it's a script. Like we're just running, like, there's no way to know. It's just all, it's made for TV. It's an illusion.
Yeah. Yeah. So on that lens of I mentioned voluntarism, are you familiar with that?
It's like, I'm familiar with the term, but I haven't gotten into it.
Okay. So yeah.
Give me the quick download.
Yeah. So it's basically a rebranding of anarchy, which, cause
like, I guess I could use one. Yeah.
Yeah. So anarchy, it's been a term that's been co-opted in the last 100 years deliberately. Like you can actually go back in dictionaries and see the definition changing from the etymology of the world means no rulers, but it's been turned into chaos and dystopia. It's gone from no rulers to no rules.
Right.
And so it's been totally psyoped, and, you know, in an attempt to like kind of, you know, get away from what it's become in the media, the different guys have come up with the term voluntarism, which I think is actually really it's a lot more intuitive to figuring out what it is. It's just mutual consent and mutual benefit. Is that all human relationships must be voluntary and the use of force is prohibited. So yeah, there's some really good concepts around that. And the movement itself, I have some concerns about, because it does seem a bit like, yeah, this is all great, but like, what happens when we disagree? And or someone breaks a contract, or like, who's going to enforce that, and how do we stop? So like, there's a lot of, you know, devils in the detail there, but the fact that there's a readily established movement of people who are trying to, they've gotten to the point where, okay, the system is corrupt. We're not going to fix this. The system isn't going to fix itself. It wasn't a bug in the system. It was a feature.
Like it was designed to do this.
It wasn't like, oops, we didn't know. It was like, no, you fuckers knew.
It's working.
Yeah. And there's been very different, you know, various iterations of that. And so there's a guy, Etienne de la Boîtie Squared.
I've seen an interview.
He's got a book. I haven't got it yet, but it's called, Government, the Greatest Scam in History. And he's kind of taking a similar approach to you, which is like, it's this whole book kind of deprogramming, pulling back the curtain on, you know, the lie of government, which I was listening to a podcast to him the other day. And he said, like, the etymology of government literally means to control the mind, govern and mentes, control of the mind. It's just like they tell you what they're doing, folks. It's just right out there. You just got to see it. I'm really excited about those movements and starting these conversations. Because it is like, we got to get past this idea that we're just going to vote in someone else, or if we can just get some reform or whatever. It's like, no, we need to exit and build a new system and learn all this stuff and try again. And we're probably going to fuck it up and we're probably going to make the same mistakes, but at least we can put in some of these principles and then be on guard to make those iterations that are necessary. Cause yeah, it's the intergenerational crime families that have been running the world for hundreds, if not thousands of years, they're not going to vote themselves out of a job.
Yeah. And like you said, like when we're talking about government and them revealing, showing the cards, that needs to be done, right? And it sounds like kind of inherent in that idea that you're talking about is this need for us to recognize the fact that all of this is kind of operating by contract, right? We are agreeing to all of this stuff. And we have to agree in order for things to play out in the way the system is designed to play out. It really, maybe the answer is that we can't look, like when you're saying who decides, right? Who's making these calls? We have to be willing to be responsible for our own affairs and contract man to man, woman to woman, and be adults, really.
Yeah, 100%. And I couldn't agree more. My only sticking point with that I'm trying to wrap my head around is like, okay, so you and I engage into a contract that's worth millions of dollars, and you break the contract. And it causes me a bunch of damages, and it's objective. Like you know, it's cut and dried. It's like, how do we reconcile that? How do we, how does our society, who enforces that? Who comes and takes your shit and gives it to me?
Some kind of true court system. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so this is where like, I'm the, again, this is Etienne de la Boîtie Squared guy says that we need governance. We don't need governments. And this, I think, was the real intention behind the US Constitution, was to create a political and legal system where it was a government of laws, not a government of men. And that the men that were kind of enforcing those laws, they had no power other than to enforce those laws. They couldn't give themselves additional rights. You know, they were purely administrative, so to speak. And so I think there's some value there. But then it becomes like super. It's like, how do you get a system like this started?
Yeah, I know.
Like, you know, because like the U.S. Constitution was like 50 guys got into a room and just like decreed that the other, you know, millions of people on the continent suddenly like we're all part of this thing now. And like, so it's like, how do you, yeah, I want to dig into that myself, and it's a topic, but like clearly the system that we're in right now doesn't work. There are, you know, at least three core functions that I see the current government plays an important role of, and that's, you know, the police, the military, and the law courts. Like those are, though, regardless of how our society functions, we need some group that, or some process for facilitating disputes, some function for mediating and enforcing the rulings of that group, and then some group of people who, or the whole society ideally, that's function is to protect us from other people that want to come in and take our shit. Because like, it's always going to happen. How we do that in a way that, you know, doesn't slowly turn into you know, the totalitarian tiptoe, as David Icke likes to call it. I think there's ways we can do that, but it's like, we have to start from that assumption versus the, you know, for the last couple thousand years, we've just moved from various versions of authoritarianism, whether it was, you know, theology or theocracies, and then there was, you know, kings, and then, you know, there was, you know, there's a bunch of people, and it just slowly dwindled down. But at the end of the day, this myth of authority, the idea that some people have rights that other people don't have, and that they can just continuously increase those rights that they have that no one else has, or that a group of people can delegate rights that they don't have to someone else, is that's where all these ideas of government comes from. And so just coming to that conclusion that principle right there is the root that's caused all these other problems, the idea that some people have rights that other people don't have. And
yeah,
whether they come from God or society, or, you know, somebody writing on a really nice piece of paper that, you know, we hereby decree that we have rights that you don't, doesn't matter. Like, that is bullshit. And that's we look for that in any of our agreements with other people, that's a major red flag. And then we can build up from there.
Yeah, it's just a claim, right? That's such a good phrase that you said, like the myth of authority. It's important in the same way we're pulling these curtains back in medicine and in all these other areas. It's the same thing. It's just, we can trace it back however long we can trace it back. It's just someone made the claim that they're in charge, and now it's gotten to the point where no one's called them on it for a long time. And now we're just in this like conceptual thing of authority. Like, it's not even really that. It's a myth. It's a myth. So exactly. Yeah, we gotta call the claim, or maybe, you know, put forward our claim, right? That their claim sucks, and see what happens. I don't know what's gonna happen, but something's gonna happen.
Totally. If you had to pick like one topic, like if YouTube came to you, I mean, that's a stupid analogy. If you could only have one video on one topic, even if it's one that you haven't done yet, that you could just like, I don't know, like if it was the only video that anyone was ever going to see, even if it wasn't something you haven't already touched on, what's the one topic that you think would be the best string to kind of pull that would start to unravel the whole curtain?
You know, that's hard to answer because, well, for a lot of reasons, but one of them is that everyone seems to have their own string. You know what I mean? Everyone kind of goes in on what their interest is, and then they start doing that, and then the whole thing goes. So it's actually better to have a you know, a wider base where it's that way. Cause like, if you get to know someone, right, and you know, oh, they're into this thing, throw them that, you know, they have this interest though. Cause yeah, I don't know if there's one big, I think everyone has their own thread is the point.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. I guess, yeah, for me, and I'm curious because you mentioned that you were going to talk about this. For me, trying to pick up, like, okay, like what's the one thread that like everybody has in their curtain? Like, you know, because some people, like, you know, the water model, I guess a lot of these things do affect everybody, but like, I think it's yeah, maybe it is, everybody's different, but I'm curious to hear your insights about the money system. Cause that, for me, you know, that was one of the big things that woke me up Because it's so blatant, it's so out there, like what's going on? You ask a couple questions, and it's also like money is kind of what makes the world go around. And so, yeah, what are, as you're doing those research into the Federal Reserve and money, what are the kind of key resources that you are digging into yourself that you're trying to distill down into those couple punchlines that are going to help wake people up to that?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically that there's no money. there is none. It's not based on anything right now. You know what I mean? Like for example, I was just reading in the Black's Law Dictionary what the legal definition of a dollar is, right? And it is a certain measurement of either gold or silver. So right now, there is currently no dollars in circulation. So what are we doing? So it just, there's not, it's just empty. It's just, you know?
Yeah. So I guess let's just, for people who are like, what do you mean there's no dollars in circulation? I have dollars in my wallet. Like, what do you mean by that?
So those are just like, you can, just because dollar is written on it, doesn't, like, I could write dollar on, you know, a whoopee cushion, but I can't now go to the store and say this is lawful money. Like, it's just, it's paper and they wrote dollar on it. I'm sorry. Like, again, I'm sorry to have to, if someone's trying to wrap their head around it, I'm sorry to be the one to hit you with the hammer, but that's just, it is what it is.
So on that same thread of money, what do you think about all these cryptocurrencies?
I actually haven't, it just hasn't resonated with me. Okay. So I haven't really gone into it at all. I think, again, like, you know, what little I know, right, a blockchain is just a tool as anything else. So it's not inherently evil. But right now, there doesn't seem to be, you know, with the way crypto is talked about in the public sphere, those options don't resonate with me as they are right now. But I will hold out the potential that there's one coming that is useful for us. That's really decentralized, right? And you know, there's people working on it.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, I would love to see the video that you put together at the end of that, because I kind of came to the same conclusion. I was part of a startup group who we were building our own cryptocurrency, and I didn't know much about it either, but it was supposed to be like an ecosystem backed. Basically, the idea was like, what if, as a, in the same way that gold used to be the kind of foundation of our financial system until the government separated the fact, like, you know, all dollar bills used to say on it, you know, you can redeem this for gold, right, at, you know, the treasury, and then they turned it into like a Federal Reserve note, which was just literally like a whoopee cushion that they wrote, you know, dollar bill on. So at one point, like, you know, gold was that objective store of value. That was the basis of our financial system. And the goal behind our startup was to find a way that we could swap out gold for ecosystem goods and services. It's like, what if, because, you know, when the price of gold goes up, it incentivizes people to go out and dig more gold, right? And so it's like, well, what if we could, you know, tie the health of the land, you know, like soil, water, and biodiversity, what if there's an objective standard that we could, like, say that, okay, this is bridging the gap between wealth and health, getting people to realize that those two things are actually, you know, think Thoreau said, it's like, what good is all the money in the world if you don't have a tolerable planet to spend it on? And so it was like, that was kind of the core idea. And then as I got into it, I just realized, like, oh, this whole thing is just another Ponzi scheme. So that was kind of very disillusioning. And maybe I'm totally wrong, and maybe my concerns were invalid, but yeah, it was scary to see how quickly it evolved into, just meet the new boss, same as the old boss.
Yeah. Kind of stuff. And I think it's worth mentioning too that like there are other kinds of wealth, right? Like what you do creates tons of wealth. If you can produce your own food, that's wealth. You know what I mean? Like to that point, there like there is no shortage.
No. No, and but this is where like I do believe that that money or the idea, not the Black's Dictionary, which is like, you know, gold or silver, whatever it is, having some medium of exchange in a unit of account that allows people to invest and save and
exchange,
you know, exchange without, you know, I want, you know, the apples versus potatoes thing. Well, I don't want any potatoes. What's the exact, like money is an incredible, it's an incredibly incredible tool that that literally enabled the civilization. The reason that you and I are talking, you know, halfway around the world to each other right now is because someone first invented this concept of money. The problem is that at a certain point, gold, because it was really heavy and difficult to carry around, someone's like, well, like, just give me your gold and I'll give you this piece of paper because it's really light and I promise I'll have it here when you need it back. And then those people just started to lend out more notes than they actually had in their reserve. And when a bunch of people were like, hey, can I get my gold back? He's just like,
yeah. They're starting to come knocking.
Let me just go in the back room and get it for you. And then, you know, scuttles away, right? And like that just keeps happening over and over and over again until the government just completely is like, well, guess what? There's not going to be any connection at all. You can't even come and ask for your gold back. Fuck you. And also gold's illegal, which they literally did.
Yeah, they got the whole world, man.
Yeah. And so, but the cool thing with that process, and I'm curious to see, you know, if you were to dig into this, is this is not a great example of the whole, just the power of comedy. Because when I was part of this company and we were digging into it, essentially, I thought cryptocurrencies were all the same. Hmm. And then, and you know, the company that we were working with was, you know, heavily affiliated with Ethereum, and which is like the sex, so like this Bitcoin and Ethereum. And when I thought they were all the same. It's like, oh, this is great. And like, there's these cool things and you read articles and this sounds really great. They're there to like Sam Bankman-Fried and at the FTX scandal. It's like effective altruism. You know, he just wants to do the greatest good for the greatest number. Like he's, what's wrong with that? And then you dig into it and it's like, oh, this is just a Ponzi scheme. I have come to the realization now that there's Bitcoin and then there's cryptocurrencies. And from my understanding, Bitcoin actually is this decentralized, like all the principles for if you were to design the perfect money system that solved all of the, it did all the things that gold used to, but then it solves the problem of, you know, the difficulty of transportation and authentication and basically the fact that it's really big and hard to move around, so you kind of need to have these centralized storage mechanisms and trading stuff back and forth. It kind of solves all those problems in a completely decentralized way. It's like, from my understanding, it is an incredibly powerful tool that even if it does end up to be a CIA you know, psyop, which there's some evidence that it's like the whole community is at least identified the principles, the goal that we're trying to achieve, and how we do that may change, but versus, you know, essentially there's Bitcoin and there's Ethereum. There's two cryptocurrencies. And then all the other thousands of coins are based off of essentially the Ethereum blockchain. There's this guy, Saifedean Ammous, who wrote this incredible book called The Bitcoin Standard and The Fiat Standard, which I highly recommend if you haven't gotten into them, because especially with your money stuff. But he's this great line, which is, you know, Ethereum is the mother asshole from which all other shit coins are born. And when you really, so it's like, you know, there's thousands of these things. And are they all corrupt? And it's like, literally just research the difference between Ethereum and Bitcoin. And you realize that Ethereum has a board of directors. They have a CEO. They have like a development team. There's someone who can go in and reverse transactions. Versus Bitcoin, there's no one you can call. There's no one there. And there never was. That's true. There was at the beginning, but eventually it got, you know, built up and then let out of the bag. And now it's like, there's no one to stop it. Versus, you know, you look at Ethereum, it's like, you know, there's been all these forks and changes And there's someone who's a board of directors who's behind those decisions, and they all know when to short and long and pump and dump and all their different stuff. And that was kind of the realization that I came to within that space, is that it's, you know, it's just meet the new boss, same as the old boss, versus Bitcoin, from my understanding, is even if it is a PSYOP, the intention is there is to not, no, but don't you trust us? Like, we don't know what will be good this time. it's the Federal Reserve, they're bad, but you know, but let us do the same thing, and we won't do that. So that's been my the conclusion that I've come to, which is really exciting, because this one of the core problems that we're going to have when we try to exit and build this new society is how are we going to solve this problem of trading apples and carrots and potatoes across from each other, while, you know, the one screw that I need to hold my piece, or a bolt that I need to hold my tractor together that just broke, I don't have that facility to do that. Like, we need that kind of specialization. So the fact that there's like someone has solved the money piece, and like the growing food is easy. It's the other stuff behind civilization that's super hard. So I'd be really curious to see, when you dig in, if you ever dig into that, the whole crypto space, what your conclusion is, and how you can like distill all that insanity. Cause it took me like months to dig through and wade through all that shit and to identify the four or five contradictions. And one of them is, like, for all these cryptocurrencies, like, do they have a CEO or a board of directors? Okay, then it's not decentralized. Right. And two, was there an ICO or an initial coin offering where they gave backroom access to their coins before they launched it? Because if they did one of those two things, it's a shit coin. Stay away from it. And I'm sure there's a couple other ones, but it's super powerful when you can get down to that level of just like find the contradiction, make a joke about it so that it sticks in people's minds, and then move on to the next thing. It's like, you don't need to spend fucking 10 years. It's like, just here's this contradiction. And unless you can solve this thing, don't think about it anymore.
Yeah, totally. And I think what's interesting about when you're saying, even if it is controlled, right, it's still, that kind of happens in every area where it's like, they're almost helping people wake up at this point. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it doesn't matter now. Like, so what that, to that point, if that's going to kick open the door for whatever the more legitimate thing is, if that's not, you know, then it's served a purpose.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's the beautiful thing. And it's really hopeful. Like, the worse the system gets, the better we look. And so it's like, they're our best advertisements for the parallel society that we're going to build is, yeah, what you watch the news and then come for a farm tour and see which world you want to live in.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of like getting a farm tour, it's like, we don't, like, I even approach it where it's like, can we really have a shortage, right, of something that we don't need and we'd be better off without, right? So it's like, for example, we're talking about the news pumping shortages. I've seen multiple publications, CNN, NPR, dozens of them, reporting a few months ago about a sriracha hot sauce shortage. So it's like, the fact of the matter is that's a report about a spicy condiment that's going to burn your asshole on the way out, going out of stock. That sounds all right with me. I'm not concerned. Like, so it's like, what point are we even like, why do we perceive that we even need these things? Like, are we going to hear about it? Like, is there going to be a marshmallow shortage, or like textbooks that are talking about like the great cheese doodle famine of 2024 coming up? Like, we don't, and that applies to the whole grocery store. Like, as you know, as a like a big chain grocery store, where it's like, we don't need anything in there really. Like, when we're talking about the quality, like for 90% of the store is the middle aisles where you can find food that's, you know, candy corn flavored Oreos, or you can go on the 10% of the store that's on the outside that's supposedly fresh produce, and it's been sprayed with pesticides and flown in 3,000 miles from Ecuador. And like, That's the level of what we call fresh in the Western world. That means it had to go through customs before it got here. It's absurd. So it's like, and then, you know, the animal products are pasteurized, or like the chickens are shot up with steroids. They got like breasts like Barry Bonds and Mark McGuire. It's like, we don't need any of it. We don't need it. So we don't have to be concerned. Like, people like you, we can just find people like you. It's really not that hard to go support a local farmer or a CSA or a co-op. It's really not difficult, no matter where you live. So it's like, we don't need any of this shit.
Amen, brother. Okay, man. So if you could go back in time and tell yourself, you know, one thing to your, like, you're in the computer lab, you're breaking down the firewall so you can watch, you know, Alex Jones or David Icke, you know, rant about shape-shifting aliens and how the queen's a lizard. And you right now you can like transport back to that 15-year-old you and tell him one thing before you get sucked back. What's the message?
Yeah, don't worry about it. There's nothing to worry about. I'll just speak for myself. I personally spend so much time, even before being in that dark space of waking up, even just in regular life, being fearful of just, you know, anxious, just in a state of fear for nothing. Nothing's going on. You know, like we were talking about, we have to consent to all this. It's all, so yeah, don't worry about it.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. Mike, from the bottom of my heart, thank you so much for the work that you do. And, yeah, it's literally, especially the last few months, it's really helped me get through the, you know, the ups and downs. The world, it's a crazy place, and the work that you're doing is giving people hope and also solutions for how to go forward. So thank you so much.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. It was fun chopping it up.
Yeah. Where can people, you mentioned you're going to have a website soon, but right now.
Yeah, website's coming soon. And then, yeah, don't slap snooze on all the social platforms as long as, I'm not kicked off, but yeah, Instagram, Telegram, YouTube, all that. When the website launches, I'll have a mailing list, which people can keep in touch. And yeah, more stuff coming more consistently.
Awesome. Thanks, brother.
Thanks, man.
I hope you gained some actionable insights from this podcast about how you can fight the powers that shouldn't be by building your own homestead. If you did, please take the time to share this episode and click all those buttons to like, rate, and follow. This helps spread our message, it makes sure that you never miss an episode, and it sends a middle finger to globalists like Klaus Schwab. I also suggest that you sign up to my newsletters directly on my websites that are in the show notes. With the Government of Canada recently passing Bill C-11, the Online Streaming Act, the threat of me being censored or removed from mainstream media platforms like this one is becoming a reality. If that time ever comes, we can stay connected. Thanks again for listening, and take care until next time.